Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prisoners will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control, and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with your politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor, and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, that is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries, and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisoners in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, well, who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
I got in a huge tax situation in 2008 because my divorce was in 2005 and my accountant had gotten in cahoots, and next thing you know, my accountant died and a girl that worked for him called my lawyer and said, "We have a problem." She had found on the floor all my tax forms for 7 years signed and with the checks stapled to them. So I'm thinking, I've signed and I've stapled the checks. Well, they were cashing the checks, keeping the money, and not turning in the tax form. They took the money out of the account that matched the exact, because I wasn't watching it.
So like, you could just see
600,000 deducted.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking it's the check. Little did I know, it was some people taking the money out.
For 7 years?
For 7 years.
How much money did that?
I ended up owing $22
million. Wow.
$22 million with the penalties. So now, wow. Listen to me, man. Me and my wife in 2008, I get the call. And the way I found out was, my lawyer called me and said, "Hey, man, we got a problem. You haven't paid taxes in 7 years. I said, "Man, what are you talking about? I paid taxes. I've been writing the checks and all this here." "Oh, man." He said, "This woman found your taxes in your accountant's office on the floor." Every check I had written and every was stapled together for 7 years, quarterly taxes, all of it. So he said, man, that's tax evasion. You can go to prison. Mm-hmm. And I said, what are we going to do? So he said, hold on, man, let me get some lawyers. So he called up some tax accountants out of Chicago. These boys was the best. And they set me down and they said, man, we got a major problem. He said, I got a friend working at the IRS. Let me take the first year. We took the first year and we sent it in. He said, man, well, this is an old tax return. He said, man, we got a problem. He got more, but he didn't know it. And so we need a tax payment plan. So the tax payment plan was so astronomical that it was no way I could pay this. So the deal was, if you miss one payment, we come and seize all your assets and you're going to jail. That was the deal. So the way I found out I was in real bad trouble was my accountants, my former manager, lawyer, got on a conference call to discuss it. But they sent out an email with the conference call number to my assistant. But it wasn't supposed to go to me. She inadvertently gave it to me. I wasn't even supposed to be on the call. So when I logged in, they were already talking and I just didn't announce myself. And I heard them say, nobody can live under this amount of stress. There's no way he can pay the back taxes, pay his current taxes, and his living expenses. And I heard a guy on the phone say, what are we going to do when he goes to jail? And I hung the phone up. I went upstairs. I said, Marjorie, Dawson, Marjorie, we got a problem. When I explained it to her, Marjorie started crying. She sat down and cried. My wife cried for 2 straight days. She said, Steve, what you going to do? I said, I'm going to go to work. I took every comedy gig in this country. I signed every contract. I went to work, man. I worked every single Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I went to every venue, the Verizon, Staples Center, MCI, Phillips. I sold out to Fox. I went everywhere. I stayed on the radio, man. I'm coming. Sold out. I never missed a payment. And for 4 years in a row, I was sending $650,000 a month to the government. Plus, I had to pay my current taxes.
New taxes.
I couldn't get behind on nothing. And I was living. So I was credit cards, running them up, paying them off. And finally, man, in 2012, I sold 49% of my radio company to iHeart. Mm. I got a check, man. I got me a check. And then, so I paid the government completely off to zero. And that was the first time, man, I could breathe. And then the pay-per-view, I said, let me get out of stand-up. Because my wife said, Steve, you finna be a major TV star. You're going to have to stop telling the jokes you're telling because you're going to ruin your career. Because she saw the political correctness turning. And so she said, Steve, you can stop if you want to. I said, baby, I can't ever stop telling jokes. It's who I am. She said, well, okay, but you got to watch what you say. And all of my TV shows are sponsor-driven. The radio is sponsorship-driven. I said, man, let me get out of this because I need time to go do more TV. And so I did one last comedy show, but I did it on pay-per-view. And little did I know, for $8, you could watch my last show. I had no idea how many people was going to tune in for that. I made a lot of money. It was the biggest single paycheck I ever made. And next thing you know, I was back.
That I just started on OutKick that I want you guys to pay attention to, it's related to the same thing, Black Lives Matter. And how can we get the athletes to pivot or understand the mistake of embracing Black Lives Matter? I think a lot of people want to boycott sports. A lot of people are disappointed that I'm watching a lot of this NBA basketball, look, I love it, man. The first sport I was a fan of was basketball and the Indiana Pacers. Went to ABA basketball games. I'm not going to give up on basketball. I'm not going to give up on athletes. I don't give up on people. And so I don't think a boycott is the right approach. You got to take the long.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go over on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it'll come. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So, if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple.
I was who I was, but I am who I am, and I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad, Cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit, and it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect, no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he...
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No. Nope.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
That's what you're saying.
No, that's not what you're saying. I have no idea.
We really need our own systems. And what's unfortunate, like when you look back historically, when great men have taken a stand to make us all strong and all come together, they were gunned down. They were assassinated because it's just so much power within the Black community that they just want to suppress it because we came over as, they say, slaves, but we were doctors. We made universities. We had the first paper. You know, we had so many things, and they just want to dumb it down. So I just don't know why we just can't come together. When we did come from the mud and being beat together on a boat together, why can't we just go together?
That's not true. But before anybody ever gunned you down or before anybody killed any ancestor, the people that looked like you and the people that were supposed to be in your corner hated you and killed your reputation first. The only way that they're able to infiltrate and to be able to kill you and gun you down is by first killing your reputation. Even if they kill you and you become a martyr, and in a lot of instances, you become a lot greater and have a much bigger impact than if they were to leave you alive and let you fumble, right? The first thing that they ever did, and even if you go back to any of the people that a lot of people don't even agree with today, right? They're still killing Martin Luther King's legacy right now, right? Mm-hmm. Right
and letting,
now.
And we letting them.
And you know the interesting thing? You know the interesting thing is about that? If you go back and you study history, most Black people didn't even like Martin Luther King. Most Black people hated Martin Luther King. Most Black people hate the very thing that is best for them. In every single instance, in every single part of society and in every single era. The very one, the one that is the biggest advocate for you, is the one that you hate first.
Yep.
They don't even have to do anything to you. It ain't them that's killing you. It's you that's killing you. We kill us first before anybody can ever do, say, or touch anything about us.
What's that? Aaron, damaged neural perception?
I got an understanding of why, who I talk to and what I've researched on why a lot of black people don't like MLK. It's what I was able to understand is a lot of black people didn't want to be integrated. They wanted to be, better segregated.
That's not true. Most black people.
I didn't say it was true or not. I said that's the understanding I got
integration,
from it.
Integration in reality. Listen, anybody can look back and hide.
Okay, after the board was buffering here a little bit, before we go to our Spanish lesson for this today, I'll jump off topic and we're going to go into more detail tomorrow with audios on this. Is today's title, jump off topic, is Tabao Villages, Rural E-Commerce, and Rural E-Com Villages. Let's start off, let's just break them down individually. Let's start off with Rural E-Commerce. You basically have two. On a larger scale of things, who's calling me? Oh, I have to decline that call. All right, so you have people that live in an urbanized area, and then people that live and when I say urbanized area, that's the city, and I'm including the suburbs, and I'm including the city, urbanized city, and the suburbs, the exurbs. That's kind of a gray area, so I'll just stick to the city and the suburbs. Now, in the United States, use my chessboard analogy, looking at the landscape, the United States, 86% of the population occupies just physically occupies just 3% of the available land mass. 97% of the United States is rural. All right. So we're going to be talking about today rural e-commerce, because that's where not only where the ball is, but that's where the ball is going. But the majority of the people that are in the rat race, at least using the United States, 86% of the public in the United States that lives in the rat race, the rat race is only 3% big. Now that's where 86% of the population of the United States is. So if you live in Chicago, you live in Seattle, you live in San Francisco, you live in Miami, Orlando, Waco, Texas, Burlington, Vermont, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. You live in any of those cities, any city that's got a population, I would say, of over, actually, to be honest about it, over, if you live in a town that has a population of over 6,000, I'll bring it up, 10,000 people or more, you're living in the rat race. 47% of the people in the United States live in towns that have a population of 47%. That's almost half. 47% of the people that live in the United States live in communities that have 5,000 people or less. The market that we're talking about today and tomorrow, which is a part of the 97% of the rural the total land mass of the United States, live in the country. They live in rural environments, and that's, if you want affordable housing, rural's the way to go. If you want to start a business, rural's the way to go. Like I said, we're going to cover this today and tomorrow. We'll go a little bit, we'll introduce today before we go to the Spanish lesson, and tomorrow we'll go into more detail. Now, before we come back to rural e-commerce, all right, because, matter of fact, just let me, the Amish and the Mennonites, and there's another group related to them called the Hutterites, that's their thing. That's their lane, rural e-commerce. But if you're not already living and or working your business in a rural community, hopefully we can give you some information between today and tomorrow that you can do. Because a lot of the Amish and Mennonites and the Hutterites are millionaires, multi-millionaires, just by selling shoe fly pies, dinners, lunches, making fences, making nothing sexy. There's really no such thing as a sexy Amish or Mennonite business. And when I say sexy, I'm appealing. That's what I mean. All right. So we're back in a minute. Now, Tabo Villages. What is a Tabo Village? And it's T-A-O-B-A-O. They're villages in China that, number one, they're all rural, and they have all different types of businesses. Some are farmers. Some are seamstresses. You know, they sew clothes, make clothes, taters and tailors and all that kind of stuff. Any kind of business, but they're all operated from rural villages. That's number one. That's the first common denominator. There's three here. That's their first common denominator. The second common denominator is they all sell through e-commerce. And one of the primary e-commerce platforms that and a lot of these villages are small. 10 people, 20 people, 6 people, could be 100 people. Some might have 300 people. But there's a lot of villages, Tabo villages, that have under 20 people. And all in that village, number one, they're all entrepreneurial. Number two, which means they all have a paycheck coming in. Number three, they might make that village, might be neckties. Or socks, or they might make shoes and socks, or any of the, like, if you're listening to me in any Western country right now, United States, England, Germany, and all those places, any Westernized country, more than likely, there's some article of clothing that you have that was made in China, either China, Bangladesh, Myanmar, which used to be called Burma. More likely, something that's on your that you're wearing right now probably comes from China. Definitely in your household, the pipes in your house, the water pipe, something in your home is coming from one of these Tabo villages. All right. So they're in small towns. And reason why they're in smaller towns because the smaller the town, the less government is needed to govern that town, and it's self-rule to a very high degree. Some of these are company towns or company villages. Here in the United States, Hershey, Pennsylvania is a company town, all built around a candy bar or the assortment of Hershey. You know, you got Hershey chocolate bars, Hershey chocolate kisses, and other products they might make. All right, now, why this is significant is 33% of the global households are what are known as e-households. What is an e-household? 33% of the households around this planet are e-commerce households. They're ordering something via the internet, using their phone, tablet, desktop, or laptop. 33% of 8 billion people on the planet are e-households. Now, going back to the chessboard landscape of the United States, 81% of the households in the United States are e-households. And they don't even realize it. As I look around the room I'm sitting in right now, I'm looking at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 Amazon boxes. I order Chinese food probably once or twice a month online. I just got some groceries in on, Sunday? I ordered those groceries that came to me about 10 a.m. Sunday morning. I ordered those groceries online at about, what time was it? Between, the, I don't know if it was 11 o'clock or 2 a.m., one of the two. Yeah, no. It was on Saturday night. I ordered the groceries Saturday night about 10 or 11 p.m., and they got delivered to my door no later than 10:30 a.m. this past Sunday. I'm one of the 81%. I live in an e-house, a household. And more than likely, if you're listening to me from a Western country, you live in an e-household too. If you've ordered anything through your phone, through an app, through your tablet, what have you, you're part of an e-household. So now, and I've done a few stories on this at least twice a year. In China, there's a holiday called, well, it's a day. I don't know if it's a holiday, but it's a day. But it brings in more money than Black Friday does here in the United States. And that's singles days. It has nothing to do with dating or nothing like that. But on that day, Singles Day, which is November the 11th, and on November the 11th, 2024, God willing, We'll do for the third year in a row, our version of Singles Day. That's November 11th, 11/11/24. That's Singles Day. Now, I give you an example. Two what they call influencers. Two influencers that I follow. Okay, Vaya, she's a she's either Chinese or Korean. I got to double check on that. But, and another guy, Austin Li, L-I. Those two alone, on Singles Day, using e-commerce, combined over $400 million within 24 hours. Now I had to find out. And that's just two people, and they sold every. Now they both do collaborations, but I mean they sold lipstick, they sold cars, trucks, farmers that came on there. Can you imagine going to a farm, and you have a harvest of tomatoes or corn or whatever you want to grow, eggplant or whatever, watermelon, and they do a live stream. You know what? Though, for those of you, this is old school stuff, that are familiar with the Jerry Lewis telethon that used to come on when Jerry Lewis was doing it on Labor Day weekend. You know, it was on TV, and, you know, you watch it, you know, it'll be on for several hours, and they were raising money for muscular dystrophy. Well, this is updated. So imagine a farmer. Imagine one farmer's doing a live stream. He's selling his tomato crop. Another one's selling his corn, whatever the harvest is. All right. Then you have another person, because with the Jerry Lewis telethon, they had, you know, different guests on 15 minutes here, 30 minutes here, what have you. So imagine you got different types of farmers, different type of merchants that are selling stuff, but it's done via live stream on location at the farm, at the factory, wherever it might be, and they're selling out. Oh, and a lot of these live streams that happen on, Singles Day in China, they're in rural locations, and they take place from Taobao villages. Now, let me explain what Taobao is. Taobao, which you can find it online, T-A-O-B-A-O, one word, Taobao.com. It's a Chinese platform. It's the Chinese version of eBay or Facebook Marketplace. Think of it that way. Well, somebody said, you know what? We don't want to let eBay get into the Chinese market and then box us out. So somebody set up a website, Taobao.com, and let's go on there right now. Check it out. And might want to start taking some Mandarin lessons or Cantonese, but that's another story, another day. But so Taobao villages are basically people who got together in the village that they're already in, or they got together and formed a village. And the primary way that they sell their goods or products, sweet potato, whatever they sell, or whatever you want to sell, toilet paper, it doesn't matter. They sell it online. Now, over here, because if you hear me right now, I'm telling you stuff that is ahead of the curve of the United States. All right? It's not that many company towns, but they're not. Let me tell you where to set up shop in these places, because what I'm about to tell you, you're not going to. You sort of got this. I discovered it bit by bit. In the United States, and then I'll wrap up for this, and then tomorrow we'll go into more detail with audios on this. In the United States, you have 50 states. And you have, the United States has over 109,000 communities. You have some municipality communities that have a population of one person, but they're a municipality. They have a mayor, and the mayor's everything. The mayor's the city council with one person. You have a lot of town. Well, like I said, 47% of the United States, 47% of the United States population lives in a town that has 5,000 people or less. That's nearly half. That's what I call the real United States of America. If you're in New York, Chicago, San Francisco, you're in the United States legally, but I don't consider those places the real United States of America. You got to go to those little small towns where you have the optimal amount of freedom to live in the kind of house that you want to live in, and you're not taxed to death. And you can use a lot more freedom. Now, granted, in a lot of these places, you might not have a bus line, there might not be a Walmart, but you can have a better quality of life without having to work 30 or 40 years to pay off a mortgage. We'll go more on that probably tomorrow. All right, so within the 50 states, and then out of those 109,000 towns, only 10 or 11 of those cities have a population of a million or more people. you know, like New York City, but like the largest, the most populated county in the United States is Los Angeles County, California. Los Angeles County, California, which has over 9 million people, there are more people that live in Los Angeles County than 40. There are more people that live in that one county in California than at least 40 different states in the United States. Los Angeles County has more people than the entire state of Oklahoma, which has around 4 million people. It has more people, Los Angeles County has more people than the state of Idaho, than the state of Montana, than both states, both North and South Dakota. That one county with over 9 million people. That's not the real United States of America. It's legally located geographically there, but it's not, as far as my definition of the real United States of America, a place where you can really go prosper and all that, it's not L.A., not L.A. County. All right? Now, that's on the county level. Now, in a county, now the 50 states, I broke that down to counties. How many counties do you have in the United States? You have a little, you have like over 3,000 counties in the United States. All right, now, many of those counties, now, let me break it down even further. Out of the 109,000-plus communities in the United States, 15,000 to 19,000 of those communities are municipalities. What is a municipality? A municipality is a community that has decided to incorporate, just set up as a business. Just like an individual can form a corporation, so can a community. New York City is a municipality. It's a municipal corporation. Los Angeles, California, the city itself, is a municipal corporation. Los Angeles County, California, is a municipal corporation. There are 15,000 to 19,000 of them out of the 50 states within the 3,000 counties of the United States. Now, let me break it down a little bit further. There are also communities in the United States. Now, this is where we get to the real United States. This is where you find it. In the counties or the towns that are unrestricted. That's where it's at. And what's the difference between an unrestricted community, particularly when it comes to zoning? What's the advantages of living in an unincorporated community where there's unrestricted zoning versus living in a municipality, which is incorporated? Well, in an incorporated community, if you wanted to build a house, number one, what kind of a house do you want to build? You know, what is the zoning? Is it R1, R2, or whatever they call it? All right, so you can't build anywhere you want to build, number one. Number two, you have to get a permit to build the house, and it's got to be inspected. That seems reasonable. Well, let's keep on going. Now, depending on the municipality, like if you're in some place like Chicago or Seattle, Washington, or Orlando, Florida, all right, you know, now you're building a house. And it's one thing that you need to pull a permit to build the house, but you want to have indoor plumbing. Well, if you're in Chicago, you got to pull a permit for that. And it ain't cheap. Then if you want to have electric in the house, you got to pull another permit for that. We're up to 4 permits so far. All right. And some of those I talked to somebody about an hour and a half ago. He was telling me in Chicago, somebody wanted to put a gate The fence was already there. They just wanted to have a gate so people won't be cutting through their yard. They had to pull a permit to put a gate on a fence that was in their, I mean, their backyard already. But Chicago's got over 3 million people. The larger the population, the more regulated you are, and you really don't own your home. Your de facto partner in these municipalities is the municipality. Just don't pay those property taxes, and you'll see who your senior partner is, who really owns your house. You're just paying rent through those property taxes. Anyway, so that's what you have within municipal. If you live in a municipality, like I say, the larger the municipality, the more rules and regulations, and the more headache you have. Now, for some people, all right, you're paying for the comfort and conveniences. Well, all right, there's a Walmart nearby, and there's an Ace Hardware store, and there are restaurants, bowling. You know, you live here, and your church is here, and, you know, you can buy some ice cream. All of it's close to you. Within an hour's drive or a 60-minute radius of where you lay your house out tonight. And a lot of people are addicted to those comfort and conveniences, and that's what you have in these municipalities. That's what they've grown to. However, the cost of living in a lot of these larger municipalities, you virtually have to be wealthy on your way to becoming wealthy. Now, in many unincorporated communities, it's unrestricted when it comes to zoning. In other words, you can build a house without pulling a permit of any kind. Why? Because they don't have a zoning department. Number two, or a planning department. Number two, there's no police force. There's no municipality police force. There's no jail. Matter of fact, now this is me speaking, that y'all do what you want to do. I look for communities where I can buy land where there's no police department. There might be a volunteer fire department, but I look for communities where there's no police department and there's no court system. Because court systems, if you live in a town that has a court, that's one of the ways that the city makes money. So I look for communities that don't have a jail, because a jail's a profit center for a municipality too. I look for communities that don't have a jail, that don't have a police force. And you know what? And I really don't need a fire department, because I can get together with some of the people and we can sort all that stuff out ourselves by installing our own systems. Or get together and have a community fire department, volunteer fire department. But the rest of that stuff, you know. So if you live in a town, I mean, for instance, let's take some cases out of the past here. Had Mike Brown, the late Mike Brown, hold it. What's his name? Mike Brown out of that met his demise in Missouri. I forgot his outside of St. Louis. Had he lived in an unincorporated community, he might be alive today. Had what's the kid that died George at the hands of George Zimmerman? And in Sanford County, near Orlando, Trayvon Martin is his name, I think. Or what's his name? Had he lived in the unincorporated part of the state of Florida, he might be alive today. Matter of fact, him and Zimmerman probably never would have crossed paths. Had Trayvon and his parents lived in an unincorporated community. So, in an unincorporated community, all right, there's no Walmart. in that town. Now, that might be one depending on where it's at, 15 minutes away, 20 minutes away, 30 minutes away, but it's not one in that town. All right, so if you want to get ahead of the curve economically, at least set up something in a rural community that is unincorporated. So where we have our properties right now in Texas, that 10 acres is, there's no zoning. We can do exactly what we want to do. So now I've named the place Stubendorf Oasis. The reason why I'm saying Oasis is because when I bought it, it's in a desert, but we got a route that leads to Mexico. We're already in the United States, but it's in a desert of mountains. That's that 10 acres. And we're going to make it into an oasis. And we have a town within that, a two-acre town called Mabentown, which we'll have the mayor on, Robin, later on. Not today, but maybe she might drop in tomorrow. So, but it's rural. Now, the first 4 acres, that's zone agricultural. So the two locations that I look for is unrestricted, which are typically in unincorporated communities, or if it's an incorporated community, because that's where our 4 acres is, but the county only has 14,000 people in the entire county. All right. So the town that we're in, and I can't even find a population on the map. But the nearest town within that county, we have a population maybe 3,000, 4,000 people, something like that. The 4 acres is zoned agricultural, which means I can put on, do anything I want, except I can't have pigs there. But if I want cows, horses, chickens, sheep, I can have all that just for whatever reason. Can't do pigs. But on the 10 acres, which is in another state, where there's no restrictions, you know, I can do what I want to do. Set up my own electric company. So we'll go through all, you know, that stuff tomorrow and all of next week. So that's where the ball's going. Like I say, 81% of the United States e-commerce households. 30% of the global economy or households are in. That number is growing because you have people that live in rural Africa, that live in rural India, rural Southeast Asia, rural Eastern Europe, rural Russia. They've got smartphones, and people are developing the infrastructure, and they're setting up shop in these places. So when you place an order somewhere in the Gobi Desert in Mongolia, it might not be happening today, but it's on its way. So on an entrepreneurial tip, Tabo villages or e-commerce villages, rural e-commerce, if you want to get wealthy, don't try to get a job at IBM. I'm just saying, the traditional Fortune 500 companies, where the ball's going is e-commerce. Set yourself up a YouTube channel. Just pick your favorite. I mean, Etsy. Now you can make millions off any of those platforms. All right, anyway, that's enough for today. Tomorrow we'll do, today was an introduction to Tabo Villages, rural e-commerce, and e-com villages. Let's see, looking over my notes. You know, if you're selling, you can do anything. including Sturthrone School. All right, and you can look it up online. Tabo Villages is an econ. What do you call it? There's a Wikipedia page, and that's Tabo, spelled T-A-O-B-A-O, one word. Tabo Village. Look it up on Wikipedia. Oh, let me just double check. Triple check. Tabo Village. And we'll get audio on here. Yo, here we go. Tabo Village. All right. Definition. Tabo Villages are rural Chinese communities where the local economy has developed to focus extensively on e-commerce via the Tabo platform. All right. You can do the same thing with eBay, Facebook Marketplace, Craigslist, Etsy, all of them. You can call it what you want. But there's also, look up, since we're online here, look up Tabo, T-A-O-B-A-O.com. Let's see, I'm going to do it on my laptop here real quick. T-A-O, oops, T-A-O-B-A-O. com. Let's go to that. Okay. I'm on my laptop. Now, it pops up in Mandarin. And I only know two words in Mandarin right now. So, but you can translate it. So click on translate. Okay, on, all right, hold on, let me go to my phone then, because it's not translating on my laptop. Okay, hopefully I'm not disconnected. Okay. T A O, then we're going to T O B A O .com. Let's see what happens here. All right, the translate part doesn't pop up on my phone. But I guess it's all in Mandarin. Okay, well, I'll try one on my laptop. All right. Anyway, so every article that you see, there are villages that make this stuff. People that live in small rural areas, so. I see that as a growing trend right here in the United States. I'm into it myself because every acre we buy is in a rural location. We don't do anything in urban, you know, unless it's a backyard. You know, if you're in the city, you got access to a backyard, start there. And we'll be going through that as well. Okay, so one of the villages that you can start going to Reba would be a language school that is sustained by e-commerce. Reba, are you there?
Yes, I am here. Yo estoy aquí. So, yeah, we're going to be really, really okay. Quick. It is now 11 a.m. on the dot. This is actually a Super Speed Spanish. We'll be done by 11:01. It's a 15-second YouTube short. So here we go.
They speak Spanish lessons. Is the phrase, I'm learning Spanish. Aprendiendo Español. I'm learning Spanish. I-E-N-D-O is like.
Now, it also says I-E-N-D-O, the ending of the word aprendiendo, which means I'm learning. I-E-N-D-O is the same as I-N-G in English. I-N-G in English. And we will break the word down in an actual lesson. Aprendiendo means I'm learning. When you say I'm learning what, if we're talking about Spanish, aprendiendo español. So that concludes our Speak Spanish.
Excellent. Excellent. And for people that want to learn a lot more, how can they contact you online as well as by phone?
Okay, you can Google Reba the teacher. That's R-E-B-A, spelled the same as Reba McEntire. Reba, the TV show Reba, spelled the same. Reba the teacher, that'll be me. You can Google that, and my websites will pop up, social media accounts and things like that. 773-449-8839. Mi nietos are awake. My grandson. Nieto, that's another word. I love teaching Spanish, so if I'm talking, you'll hear me just throw a word out there. Nieto. If we're actually mastering our alphabet, you'll certainly be able to spell those words. With that particular word, nieto means grandson. N-I-E-T-O, nieto. Under abuela. Or abuelita affectionately. So I would certainly, I'm going to look forward to taking you guys further into. Hey, silencio. Silencio. Gracias. Lesson by texting, I am a scholar or I am a scholar to 773-449-8839. Again, 773-449-8839. Thank you, Brother L.A. Gracias por su compartir. Thanks for sharing your spotlight.
And gracias as well. And your grandsons know what silencio means because they got quiet.
Right. And that's that cognate. That's one of those words. That's a cognate. Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's true. It is a cognate. It is a cognate.
Yeah.
All right. On that note, we're going to kick off well, no, that's it for today. So we'll be back tomorrow. We're going to pick back up on Tubal Villages and Real E-Commerce with new, brand new audios that we haven't played before. So we'll be back tomorrow. And then how you can get involved, because we basically have the land already in two locations. We just had to set up things, a couple of things online, and then a master plan for the offline stuff. Boots on the ground, Phil. So on that note, everyone have a good rest of the day.